the other half of our fairly simple model, that is the wing players. Here we're starting to see like one of the benefits of Django with having something like a database at the back is you can do relations between models. Sometimes when you do this in other toolkits, you have to put a note on both ends of like, if I'm linking model A to model B some way, usually the relation works both ways. Like usually I want to say that A is related to B, and if I have a B, what are all the A's that are related to it? I want to go both ways. If you have that functionality, often you need to put an annotation on both ends somehow. With Django, there's some fairly clever work being done under the covers, but you only have to label one end. In this case, the match class says I have a relation, a foreign key, which is a one-to-many relation to the player class. And a player class can actually find out what are all the matches that involve me. There's a little bit of technicality here. Because I have two foreign keys to the player class, I need to tell Django how to differentiate between them. If I only had one foreign key, I wouldn't need to have this related name attribute there. That's sort of a bit of a warm of a demonstration. I do need to tell it, when you're referring to find all the players that are, if I have a player, I want to find all the matches where that player was the home team. I need to refer to that by one name. I want to find all the players where all the matches where it was the away team, I need to use the other name. And we have here home score and away score. If you're very familiar with databases and stuff, this is really a many-to-many relation with some extra fields in the middle. It's a many-to-many relation between players where we have a home score and away score added in. Another inner class pops up here. The meta class, both meta and admin are special names for inner classes in Django. The admin class contains information for the admin application. The meta class contains information about that model that doesn't have anywhere else to live. And we put in that special class that there's no chance of a name clash with attributes you might want to put on your model. In this case, the problem is when I use match in the admin interface, you want to put an S on the end. So I just tell them, look, in English, the real literal is matches with an E. Purely cosmetic. There's many other things that can go in there, again, it's all in the documentation, but in this case, this is just so the admin interface looks sensible. If I didn't put that in there, I'd be seeing M-A-T-T-H-X in the admin all the time, and that annoys me. We see the admin, in this case, I'm only putting in two columns, and you might go, well, wait, there are none of the attributes in the model. Then you look a little bit further on and we see match name and score are actually down here. In the admin interface, I don't have to just display attributes in my model. I can display something that is a function. Django knows, okay, call that thing to get the value back. In this case, match name just returns home team versus away team. And score returns the combination of the two score fields. So in the admin interface, as we'll see in a minute, I don't actually get access to home team, away team, home score, away score explicitly. Instead, I see these two string combinations. You might be saying, well, why do I have match name instead of just using stir? Again, a slight warning, I can't use stir in the admin list. So I wanted to have a stir function as well, so match name just returns the stir of the class.
At this point, we go back to our demo, and I admit to having cheated, and here's a demo I prepared earlier. Exactly the same as before, except it comes pre-populated with data, and the model that I just showed you has been typed in completely. Yeah, but really good memory, there's a bonus field in the player model. We'll come to it in a minute. But here is just a class, but it's just a pure Python file. Nothing special at all here. It has to be perfectly null Python. I guess first I'll actually show you how the admin interface works here. One of the nice features that comes with Django as far as development goes is it comes with a little developer web server. So you don't have to bother setting up Apache in Mod Python or
like HTTPD and some other WSGI interface or something like that, which is what you would use in production. Apache plus Python being a very easy and popular way of running production level Django type.
But for development purposes, it's just pretty nice to have a local web server. Runs on port 8000 by default, so we can change that. It runs on my local interface. Again, I can change that if I want it to run on a remote interface. This is under no circumstances to be used for production deployment. Anyone who does, we just laugh at them all amazingly, because it's single-threaded. So if you're trying to show someone else what's going on here, and you're both accessing it at once, it gets very slow. It hasn't been audited for speed or security or anything like that. And frankly, there's just no need to do so, because we have nice, easy production deployment solutions. But the advantage of this is if I'm sitting on my laptop or at home developing what I want is a very fast web server that just starts up, this is that I also know to monitor the files in the project, so if it sees any of them changing, it restarts and reloads those files, so that I can just leave this running in one particular terminal window, be happily developing somewhere else and saving files, providing I don't save a syntax error. It will just keep reloading those files and I'll see the changes immediately in my web browser. If I make a syntax error, the wheels come off a little bit, but don't do that. Well, that's a problem you have to fix anyway. So, at the moment, something exists at the root URL. This is the standard Django is having a bad day. And as you see on the bottom here, you'll see this error because debug equals true is setting a setting file, which is the default setting. In production, often says debug equals false, and you would get a normal 404 page that you can happily configure for your site. But in development, again, this is very useful. I've requested a particular simple request method, it's got the URL, it's got the things that it's trying to match this against. URL processing is just type of regular expression that we all know and sort of love. In this case, it's looking for something that I start with admin or something that starts with sports, and I give it a call nothing. This page is also good. If you get a traceback, for example, or if the code blows up, it gives you the full traceback, including what the variable values were at each level of stack frame, and what your environment looks like, and things like that. So it's actually very useful for debugging purposes. Many people leave it on in production. Because if something goes wrong, it doesn't really reveal too much. We make sure that any password variables and username variables, I think, get hashed out in the debugging output. So if you're careful, it's possible to leave it off. Go to the admin page here. Oh dear. What password do I do? Okay. Your ABC123. I need no work at all to create this. You can tell that because it looks very nice. This comes out of the box with Django. As soon as I add Django contrib admin to my install application, and I add any classes that I add the admin inner class to, they appear here. You can see down the bottom my sports application with the two models inside it. We can also see a couple other classes, the auth app and the site app that came installed with Django by default. And I can click on one of these, for example, players. Here are a list of players that I previously entered. I can go in and edit those. We can see that, if you remember, the players model had a name and a city field, both of which were required. I could add a new player. Now, if I leave out the city field here, the name and city are both in boldface, meaning they're required. If there were any optional fields, they wouldn't be in boldface. I can show you examples of that later. If I leave out the required fields, you get a fairly in-your-face error message about what's gone wrong. Again, Django has made it easy. Perform the infrastructure being used here in the admin space for entering data is available to people using the framework default. So, it's very easy to create forms and say, look, this field is required in the form, and if it's not required, you'll get back a nice error
of this nature, or if an entity is required, you enter a string, it'll give you back like an integer ID or valid date required, for example. So okay, we enter a similarly, and here we see why I put the both names plural, because that was where the matches showed up. In a matches thing, if you remember, the home and away teams were foreign keys to, or relations to, the players field. Here I have drop down boxes that give me the different players that I have a choice for. I also, the little plus sign beside it means I can add a new player. If I get to this point and I decide, wait, I haven't entered one of the players I wanted, actually a little pop-up box comes so that I can add a new player at this point, complete with all the error checking and everything. So this does make it, okay, this is not the completely perfect entry interface for every possible circumstance, but if you're trying to enter a bunch of data quickly or if you're testing, like I was here, makes it very easy. Just out of the box, you can start entering data. There is even, if you really want to, there's a whole bunch of, not so exciting here because I got it right first time, but you can see a whole bunch of user information. A lot of people, including myself, on my web log, I've written it in Django, and I just use the admin interface for entering entries. It has a big text field for the entry, and it has things like whether to publish the article or not. I'll show you the admin interface for that. Well, actually, we can look at that now because it's, the response time will be slower because this website is in London. It's not on the production site, it's driving me later. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh. Alvin wants to
go. Well, I didn't be that same. We can see why
I'm
going to log in. Don't even log in. All right, let me look at this one. Well, I never have to log in.
There's always login. Just keep putting away
passwords
until
you
get it,
all right? Yeah, okay, well, I'll have to think about what that password might be. No, the real problem is that whenever I'm using this one, it's from home, and I'm always logged in, so I never have to remember my own password. Clearly, it's not one of the three or four web ones I use. By the way, just back here, this is the window we're doing run server in, and you can see it's giving you semi-sensible feedback about what's going on as a normal web log sort of situation. So, in particular, we can see things like... ...200 response code in HTTP is we've got the after that correctly. 302 is the page has not changed. So this is an example of the sort of paging action. In this case, I think the browser has just said, I've got a copy of the page and it's a completely static page, so it hasn't changed. So then the first time it sent back 1620 bytes of information, second time, nothing. 4500 the next time, so clearly Flash Admin is not always returning the same information. Sorry, the redirect, right? Yes, absolutely. Why is it redirecting now? I suppose. Right. When we submit data to a form in Django, the default action upon returning to that page is actually to redirect and get the page. The advantage of doing that is that if you hit reload in your web browser, you don't get a, do you want to push the information to this page again? You just retrieve the page again. There's a fairly neat sort of philosophy running through the way we try to encourage people to build forms that if you get the page, you get the information from the page. If you post to that resource, to that particular URL, you're adding new information to the page. And so we don't want people hitting reload saying you posted information to this page or this page was retrieved by a post. Do you really want to re-get it? It's a little bit scary if you don't remember what's going on. So we re-retrieve the page so that a reload just works really there. More information than you really needed to know. Oh, we can access data from the Python flash. That'll be able to access the Python. Another benefit that manage .py gives me is a little Python shell. The only reason I'm using the manage.py shell instead of just typing the word Python is it set up my environment properly so that this directory is on my Python path and things like this.
Now I can go from sports.models import player and match. Okay. Set up.
And at this point, just to give you an example of what we can do, this data I showed you before in the admin interface is stored in the database.
There is a nice little query interface built into Django so that, for example, I can get all of the player objects. Hey look, there they are,
including a Batman one that I just added, so this isn't safe. What's going on here? Player is the class we created, just the normal Python class. Object is a special attribute that was added to that class called a model manager, in Django terms, that contains all of the magic required to store things in the database and retrieve things out of the database. Now, getting all these things is not particularly exciting. I might want to, for example, just get the ones who are called Fred.
Well, name is one of the attributes on my model. There we go. That's all of the players called Fred.
Now, my model is actually set up a little bit inexactly in that I didn't make name unique. So I could have many players called Fred here. So I'm getting back a list. If I knew there was only one player called Fred, there is a special shortcut called get that gets me the player called Fred. However, you see the difference.
Put on Google Bedrock.
Here we get back four of the players. Bandam, I unfortunately typed in Bedrock with a little b.
If I try to get the single player that's in your Bedrock, the little 4,
because we're expecting all of our players to return 4 exclamation mark. Scary exclamation mark. So this is only useful when you really know the field contains one object. It's just a shortcut so that you don't have to go get the list and take the 0th element all the time.
We can name fields are not very interesting. Like character fields are not very interesting. For things like okay, the match dot object. I want to find one where the home score is equal to home score equal 4, for example.
I get 1.
I could also do a query along the lines of home score less than 15.
Now there's a little bit of magic going on there, the double underscore LT. This is because, again, we're in Python. And in Python, this is not valid syntax in a function call. Well, it's only valid if home score is an existing variable, we're going to convert that to a Boolean. So we want a way to say, okay, pass in the name of the field and the comparison operator that I want, in this case, less than, and the value that I want you to compare it to. So there's we come up with these double underscore things. Like we have things like greater than or equal to, or less than, or greater than, or even equals, although equals is implied if you don't do anything.
Contain?
There is a contain for strings. There's things like earlier than and later than for date fields. There's is null and not null, so that you can check if a database field is null or not, and that's important. Check that. Yes, sir. Question.
You put home score equal 4 there. In Python, isn't the actual equals usually 3 or something?
Okay, the question was, I've got a single equal sign up here in the first row, and isn't in Python it going to be a double equal sign? No. Double equal sign is the comparison operator in Python. So if I'm trying to check if 1 equals 4, single equal sign, well, this won't work. Is the assignment operator. And what I'm doing is I'm actually saying the filter function call takes the parameter called home score. It's an optional parameter, but right, and I'm assigning that optional parameter the value 4. It also takes an optional, these optional parameters it takes are pretty large and wide. For example, it also takes a parameter called home underscore score underscore underscore LT. Now, obviously we construct these dynamically.
Yeah. Python's just going to ask you doing that by interest.
Yes, yeah, we're doing this phase inspection. You can actually tell Python, give me a dictionary of all the parameters this guy passed in. Let's inspect these to see if they're valid. We don't have to build up the 6 billion combinations of comparison operators and fields and everything there. So, yeah, it is only meant to be a single equal. If I put a double equal there, but the good news is, if you put a double equal there, it is going to fail.
Okay.
Right. So, but the nice thing is there's no source for confusion here. This being Python, not Perl, it will actually, the wheels will come off at the right moment. Look, that is an invalid comment, by the way. That it's good when things fail when they should, instead of just continuing on. So we can access this data from the Python prompt again, which makes it very useful. Python programmers are used to being able to open up a prompt and start it and see, to see what happens. Quite often on IRC, people are asking, how do I do X, Y, Z? And there are people like myself or a few other people sitting around going, well, we give an answer and it might look like magic. All we've done is open up Python prompt and type in a quick example and see what happens. Yes?
I
was
talking about the query.
Yep.
Did you talk about how to map onto SQL?
I wasn't. I could show you how to map onto SQL and you'll see why I'm not going to...
Not,
no, it's, doing, it's a little bit more intelligent than that. From Django, .db, import, new...
Let's just pick one of these.
This is a little debugging aid that allows us to look at what SQL has actually been created in. Again, only valid when debug is on. People sometimes complain when I'm developing my application, I'm doing 10,000 queries, it keeps getting slower and slower as the memory leaks. No, you've got this SQL query caching turned on and we're storing all those queries. A list in Python can take a bit of memory. And we can see this was the one. Okay, this will be the last query I ran. Okay, this is a little bit tricky. We ran this particular query. Give us all of the objects whose score was less than 15. So it first ran the query to find out which players, which matches were involved there, but then it needed to display the names when printed the strings of these, and needed to display Fred versus Wilma and Wilma versus Betty, and so it had to go and look up those names, which required another query. It did those in multiple queries in this case. We're getting the ID, we're getting the name and the city from the sports player table, which is the players table. If we look at the full list here, I don't spend too long on this. Somewhere back here we should be able to see the one where is this guy here, around here.
Yes,
the joins can happen when you're selecting from, for example, as we'll see in a minute, the players table can refer to the away score of the matches that the player was involved in all in one big Python statement, and this results in joins by the time it gets down to SQL. As you can see here, it's generating, well, this is reasonably trivial SQL, but it can get pretty hairy and pretty long. Again, if you really care, if you want to write direct SQL, if there's something that the Django object to relation mapper can't handle, you can write your own SQL, but often you don't need to. And again, today I'm trying to give people a flavor of what can be done rather than the really deep diving stuff, hoping more to inspire you to go and have a look at what we can do here. But again, if you need to and if debugging is necessary, you can look at the exact SQL statements that are going on, which is also very useful. Here is an example, a slightly more complex example using this query interface. Suppose in the player model, which up till now contained the player's name and city, I also want to be able to display for against score. What we're aiming for here.
Oh, so many copies of it.
We can see in the last column there, the for and against score. They're not present in the player model, they're actually taken out of if you think conceptually what you want to do for a particular player, look at all the matches they participated in, add up all the scores where they were the home team, add up the home scores where they were the away team, add up the away scores, that gets you their four score, do the alternative to get the away score. We can do this in a little function. Maybe not the most efficient type in the world, but it works. This is inside the player model, so I already have an object here, the old self. Home matches is a special attribute. This is the other end of the foreign key. Remember, the matches model had a foreign key pointing to the player's model, and I said his name was home matches, and it had another foreign key pointing to the player's model, which was the away team. So in this case, it says, okay, look at the, go backwards along that link, get me all of the matches that this player participated in that was a home match. Add up the home scores for that, add up the away scores. Similarly, for all the matches where this player was the away team, add up the scores in the reverse order, that gives me the for and against total. Now, full disclosure, that wasn't what the method looked like the first time I did it. I really can't do math at all. And I didn't think that it was a lot shorter the first time I did it, and completely wrong. You can't give the right answers, I'm sticking with it. But that, it sort of gives you a feeling here. We have a way of using these special attributes that are, to access the other end of the link, the other end of the foreign key. We can do this with many-to-many keys, we can do it with one-to-many. So, and this will result in a join in the SQL when I execute statements like that. This can lead to some quite complex stuff. You can even have, by the way, a key, a join pointing back to itself in a table. So a very common, if you're constructing it, say a tree of tags or topics in a blog, you might have a field that is the name of the tag and another field that is the parent. And the parent field is a foreign key back to itself. Now there might be, and you have to set it up so that one is allowed to have a blank parent because the root of the tree won't have any parents, or maybe it has itself as a parent. And then everything has a parent which creates a tree structure. And then you can walk back through the tree and create lots of things like do with tree structures like that. So it is even possible to have things referring back to themselves. Moving on. Very quick introduction to what the template language looks like in Django. Obviously, the parts in red are the template language. The parts elsewhere are just normal HTML. In this case, I'm producing an HTML page. Django instructions in their template language are basically delimited by curly braces with a percent sign after. They are whatever we want to call them. Directives or statements. Accessing variables inside the template is the double braces here. Now just trust me, there's a little bit of magic before this happens. The template is going to receive a bag of data that's called the context. And the template is going to dive around in that bag of data to pull out the things it needs. In this case, the interesting thing is it's going to receive something called an object list that will be a list of matched objects. There's nothing here that says that's going to be the case, I'm just telling you. The view function that calls this will do that. I run over this list of match objects, pulling out each one in turn. And this is just the model we saw before. I can actually access its attributes, just like Python attributes. So I can get the name of the home team. Now here we see again, we're walking through this foreign key. Match object has a home team, which is actually a link to a player object that has a name attribute. So match.homeKey.name gives me the name from the player object. Similarly for the city and the score. You can't do everything possible in Python in a template language. We have intentionally made it so that it's not a full programming language. The idea here is the template language is simple enough for web developers to learn. And I don't mean that as web developers are stupid, I just mean they have other skills and they shouldn't have to also learn Python. And so it is possible in many organizations to have web developers pick this sort of thing up in 15, 20 minutes and learn by example a bit. And they can happily be designing away on their web pages while the code developers are writing the models and so on. And the reporter is entering the information via the admin interface. Okay, so you can see here the pragmatism of this was built for a particular purpose that happens to also work well in other places. So you can't do everything possible that you can do in Python. Particularly, you can't do assignments inside the template language. By default. You can extend the template language in any way you like. So I can write new tags. There's a, for example, a for tag comes in Django, a for loop comes in Django. If I want a for loop that does something special, I can write my own for tag, or I can call it whatever I like. You can write, it's pretty common, for example, on a blog to maybe have a tag that generates a summary of all the posts on that page, or all the dates on that page. And again, a tag is just, it's called out to a bunch of Python code that is given the same data as the web page has and can do whatever it likes with it. So it is possible to extend a template language. Naturally, some people have written their own template tags that allow assignments because they wanted to be able to do sort of temporary storage while they were laying out their information. I can't actually say their motivation was wrong for doing that, but we've decided within the Django community not to allow that sort of thing, not to have that as standard, and also not to discourage anyone who wants to use it as an extension. So there's a lot of different directories that come with the templating language for building sensible things. There's obviously for loops. There's within a for loop, you can have a counter to say which element you're up to within the loop. Is it odd or even, for example? So if you want to have alternating colors in a table line, you can look at the length of a list. Particularly, if you want to see if I have no elements in this list, don't display anything, otherwise put something in. Or if the next element is not empty, then you want to put a little ball link down the bottom to go to the next page, things like that. There's tags for marking a section for translation. If I was marking this page up for translation, I may very well put a translation tag around the contents of the H1 up here, just to mark it so that the translators have to convert that to their own particular language. In our particular example, the next thing that happens, we have a model, we have a template, we want to jam these two pieces of information together, and this is where the view function comes in. There are some cases where the putting together of this information is done in such a common way that we actually have shipped some functions in Django so that you have to do no work at all. And these are called generic views. The types of things here might be, I want to select all the stories within all the objects of some kind within a particular date range and pass them to the template. Or I want to select all of these objects and pass them to the template. They're pretty common things, but there are generic views for doing date range selection or doing selection of everything that I might pass in and so forth. I'm going to cheat here and just use one of them just so we get something up and running, which also gives us a quick introduction to what the URL, the very first part of this pipeline I showed you earlier, how we dispatch to the Python code based on the incoming request. We have to look at the URL and work out what do we do with this. The interesting portion here, and I can't highlight because since I clicked the mouse, we'll go to the next slide. The interesting portion is this URL pattern coupled out here. Even without knowing anything about Django, you can see, okay, if we have the admin prefix coming in, pass it off to apparently some other function. Include works exactly like you would expect. Pass this control one to the next guy. Allow very modular design. If we come into the sports section, the second option here is the view function to call. In this case, it's a standard generic view that I've imported from Django itself. And the optional third parameter in this tuple is the dictionary of information to pass through this view. Usually your processing is based on some sort of request-specific context. In this case, InfoDict, we see here, I'm selecting a bunch of objects. In this case, everything will match. And I'm telling it the template to use, which is actually the template I showed you on the last slide, agent-faces, matches.html. If I do this, okay, so it's running. And I go from sports. This is what that template produced before. Okay, the H1 we might remember. It then loops through all of the matches, displays the player name, their city in the right order, and the score. Or phrase.handle. And okay, there's only two matches here. But you can see if I had a bunch of blog posts or stories or whatever, I've done it in essentially no lines of code, three lines of code, very close to zero. If I want to do something more complex, I have to write my own processing code that looks at the request and keeps going like that. But the simple thing, many people get by just using generic views for a long time. And then they start complaining, generic views don't do enough. Generic views need this or need this. We start saying, okay, suck it up. It's time to learn to write a proper view function. But the nice thing is, you can also call generic views from elsewhere. You do your little preliminary processing and then just call the view directly from your own Python code. So it turns out it'll be possible to do a lot with these things. And I'd encourage you, if you're starting to use Django, start looking at generic views early on, because there are people who are, like, the challenge is there are people who are real non-programmers who go a long way from using generic views. This is why you maybe don't want to write a view. Okay, real life example, taken from my blog code. And I've actually topped out some life that's just last slide. But nothing significant has been removed. There's even a comment.
How did that stay in there? It saved five lines by moving that.
Right. This is just part of my blog. I want to, if you go to the section of the blog on software/Django, we want to see all of the blog entries that have that tagline. So this function gets called, the very first parameter is the incoming HTTP request, and it's wrapped up as a Python object. But I can access everything in there, the method, the URL they called, all the headers they sent me, where they came from, everything you get access to via Apache or your web server of choice. Okay, a little bit of this method serving dual purpose, so there's a little bit, if you don't actually request a topic, I show you all of them, which is also called the front page. If there is a particular topic, I need to get I have a hierarchical structure of topics. So if you request the software topic, you also get everything software/Django, software/Python, and so on, all the way down the tree. So I need to get all of the tags that are under that particular tree. I wrote on my tag model, I wrote a get subtree method. If that tag happens not to exist because you're searching for, I don't know, very green hashes or something, it gives you an error. And there's no error page. And then we just run through these tags, pulling out their ID, just their primary keys from the database, essentially, and then find all of the entries that have their tags in that list. Again, we can see another form of the query thing here, the in operator, which is exactly like SQL in operator. Find all the entries where their tags are in that list and make them distinct, because some of my entries have multiple tags on them, so I might have software/Django and software/Python on the same entry. I have a left hand one. So just remove some juice. This looks like a tragic hangover from something I deleted. And then pass off to another function that just returns the page. All this guy does, trust me, is jam together the template I pass in, the entries, which is a list of objects, and jam them together and clip it out. It takes things like the page number and a few little things like that for if you're paging through them, but that's not really important for the purpose of this. So you can see here, I'm using a couple of different models. I'm using them in a slightly non-trivial way, fairly intuitive, but non-trivial, and we're getting something out of it. Yeah. I'm really running out of time, so I'm going to skip that portion of custom template tag. Just as some examples, if people want to, what do people learn best by looking at something that's already been written? These are in no sense order of perfect to not perfect or anything, they're just the order I thought of them. My own blog software is available at that particular URL for download. The website, the Django website itself, djangoproject.com, is all written in Django. And that code is available for download, actually. Via a subversion repository, so you can download the code yourself and run it at home. Pretty good example for looking around, because it does some non-trivial things on that website. The Django project page that I mentioned earlier, was just before that big screenshot of basically Django powered sites, a lot of them have their source code available. Not all of them do, but some of them do. Google opened up a code repository, they announced it during Oxcon last year, back in July, August. there's a bunch of, search for Django in there, there's a bunch of little Django applications to do useful things in there. There's a, at least I think there's a wiki, there's a content management system, someone's written a few things like that. All code to look at. And then we don't get on the mainnet and start code. People are now, I made code XYZ available. Mainnet is, by the way, basically there's two to Django, or three. They're all Google groups. There's a Django users mailing list, or surprisingly enough, Django users, which is helping people who want to use the framework. So hopefully people like this in this room. There's a Django developers mailing list, which is for people developing the framework itself. A lot of discussion of future features, bug fixes, how pleasant the users are, that's probably it. There's also the Django announcements list, which is just a read-only, very rare list, in case we need to make a security announcement or a release announcement. It's just for people who just want to keep up with what's going on in the community. I think there's been a total of about 5 posts to that list in 6 months. Very low. Whereas Django users and Django developers are definitely high volume mailing lists. But unbelievably helpful. Like Django users, if you post a question, you will get an answer or fix within 24 hours and they will be useful. It's very encouraging how well the community of users are helping themselves here. So maintain it, don't really have to pay much attention to that list, but just keep burdening along, which is fantastic. If you want to sort of, the hard thing about learning things like this is you want to see what people are thinking about, how they're approaching certain problems. So just get ideas for what you can do. A bit of a lack of published books at the moment in Django, but there are a few sites that are worth reading, for example. The whole Morgan Lawrence Kansas writer wrote a pretty good series of blogs. Jay Sennett is one of their developers. I think he was originally actually hired on to do a lot of JavaScript. Didn't have enough to do there, so has become a very big contributor to Django itself. Jeff Cross is a web developer and Flux designer who has taught himself to use Django very efficiently. Like, his whole website is written in Django. He started out just using generic views, then extending them, and he must have moved beyond that now because his website does a whole bunch of stuff. So it's quite impressive. Jacobian.org is Jacob Kaplan-Moss's site. He posts, well, I would say he posts infrequently, except I post about as often, so I can't really criticize there. And so when he does, he occasionally has very good posts about how to use Django or ideas that they're trying out. I guess I could also add my own blog to there, pointyfic.com/blog. If you type my name into Google, like the second link is my blog, so you don't remember too much there. I use them more regularly and still sometimes do post little Django-specific articles. I need to get back to doing that. And djangoproject.com/community is a sort of Planet Django, if you like, an aggregation of a whole bunch of different people posting Django blogs. Not all of them in English, so if you see a German post go by or something in Cyrillic, don't worry, they usually don't post in English. But it's a very useful one to just keep an eye on what people are doing. Because people post, I solved this problem in Django, and it's worth knowing that they did it. Which means I'll go back to the front and just give everyone a chance to copy down that URL again, which is where I'm going to put up the slide. Probably this evening, or maybe even later on this afternoon, actually. I should get to that in time. So I'll put up the PDF and the OpenOffice presentation of this on that website. Let me fairly short of time, but I'll put a few quick questions there. Anyone have questions? Yes?
How's that good compatibility?
Interesting question. We haven't, and I guess I should answer the question was how is backwards compatibility, and I guess I should answer the slightly broader question of what are releases like and things like this. Django hasn't actually made a 1.0 release. The last release was called 0.95. We're about to do something called 0.96 in a couple of weeks, because immediately after that, we're doing a big push to 1.0, which will involve backwards compatibility. So we're doing people are using Django in lots of production sites at the moment, so we actually have to be a little bit responsible here. We consider it's not 1.0 yet, we can do what we like, and that didn't last very long. It's just not a very responsible way to treat your users. If you want people to try this stuff out, don't break their code. So 0.96 is going to be a release that is backwards compatible with what we've got up till now, and then we're going to have to break a few things just before 1.0, because we don't want to do a 1.0 release of these things going to not remain stable. By and large, most stuff doesn't change. If you wrote code over the last year, it will still pretty much all work. We've made a few little changes to the query interface to enable it to be a bit more maintainable and to come up if we have to. What other backup and compatible changes? We're about to have, there's something, a couple of things we occasionally move from out of core into the contrib section, so you have to change your import path on some very old code. We're about to do one more of those as well. Something that is in core is about to move into the contrib section because it depends on something in the contrib section, so it doesn't seem right to have it in core. Again, what that means is people will have to, between 0.96 and 1.0, will have to change their code. The good news there is, when we did the last really huge backwards incompatible change we made, we have a wiki, it's very useful.
Sub-version, yeah.
And that's probably, that's what's showing in the 096 as well. Mostly because we put some, one of the big changes since 095 is we've actually put in, we've rewritten the form handling infrastructure. We didn't rewrite it actually, we moved the old stuff aside, we moved the form section to old form and have put in a new module called new form. And we're encouraging everyone to use new forms because old forms is, well, old and going away. New form fixes a bunch of things in light of experience. And if you, and so that's only been since 0.95 that we've actually put in new forms. And so we really like everyone to not use old forms anymore. However, there are people with existing code out there that we don't want to say, look, don't rewrite your 2,000 lines of code overnight, please, because we're about to make this thing go away. No, but we're making a 0.96 release so they can continue to use that, and I'll just miss out on a couple of extras that we added since then. For anyone starting new stuff, it is very much worth starting with the latest subversion or with the 0.96 release that will be out in a week or two. I just wanted to show this page, which was the last, we did a really huge 0.95 contained this feature that was sort of colloquially known as removing the magic, because there were a bunch of features in Django that were a consequence of the way it was originally written and not intended for open release, were hacked into the release and were a bit unpleasant. So the magic got taken away, but became a bit more Pythonic, which meant there were a bunch of changes you had to make. Well, there were a few changes, you know, two screens pulled off and like that. That was a huge, unpleasant change that we didn't really want to make. But we wrote a wiki page saying, look, here's the things you have to change, step by step. If you don't want to rewrite your project, if you don't want to start from scratch, here's how to change your existing database for all three databases. Nice girl, was a bit longer. Here's some, okay, moving on. a few database changes have to be made. You have to, maybe a couple of imports have to be changed in various places. If you didn't used to have the HTML extension, templates used to assume there was an HTML extension. Probably a bad choice, we made the extension. You can call whatever you like. If you want to keep using old templates, add .html to the end of it. Things like that. So we had this whole wiki page and it turned out to be very good. Someone wrote a sort of Clayton's Notes version of this page. It was just a quick checklist. And I ported a project that a client gave me that I'd never seen before, basically ported it over to the new code in about a day and a half. And it was probably 5,000 lines of code, which is makes it about a medium-sized Django project these days. And it was pretty straightforward. If we ever do any more big changes like that, I expect we'll do a similar thing with it. Provide the cookbook style, here's the changes you need to make. We do care about not annoying the users a lot. So that's your question?
Yes,
very much.
Yes, sir. How easy is it to have, say you've got an existing database populated with data, how easy is it then to wrap Django around that? Or is it easier to start from scratch?
Right. The question is, if you've got an existing database and you want to wrap Django around it, basically to provide a heightened layer over the top of it and start using all the cool Django images. Pretty easy, in fact. Not completely painless, but it is possible. Again, Django Admin, the Swiss Army Knife, has a little command called inspect db. You give it the database name and try it to work out.
here is what your models will probably look like based on this database. Can't do everything. If you've got a few funky fields, they don't quite work, but you can then edit that by hand. And at that point, you basically will give you the models that will work for those database tables.
It works from there.
Just print them out. You can save that for a file, and then start working. You may have to do a little bit of hand tweaking, but it does 90% of the work for you. The only problem you're going to get there is you have things like multiple column primary keys. We don't handle that at the moment. A few monkey really deep features like geolocations in Postgres and stuff like that. We don't have fields to handle that. But if you get 90% of the way there, and people have done this. Any other quick questions? I'm really over time, so I'm going to say bye-bye. Okay, look, I'm going to be around the rest of the day tomorrow, and so catch up with me by all means if you want to.